Oh, I see Slater. I don't know what that second word could be. It could be Slater Bob, Slater Joe.
Yeah.
Slater Kinney?
Yes.
Whatever that is.
Yeah, some boy band, I'm sure. It's like probably NSYNC's long lost cousin.
It's just some Australian thing you wouldn't understand.
Side project.
I would not. It's just the outback. It's the walkabout, man. So, all right. Well, we are with RJ and Tim. So we're really, this is great. We have three countries. This is the second episode of Arrow now. The first was a few months ago with me and Dave Eves. And so we are representing three countries, which is fitting because Arrow, I think, is a pretty global label. I guess Criterion is as well, but I don't know. It seems like, feels like Arrow is a little more global, maybe because it's centered in the UK. But, so RJ is in Canada, and Tim in Australia. I'm in America. So you have to really overemphasize your accent, guides. So RJ, say something.
A boot what?
That's good. All right. And Tim?
Struth. Crikey, blimey.
Y'all come back now here. All right, so now we have a show. All right, so RJ, happy birthday. I know you just had one yesterday. Did you do anything fun? Or?
I took the day off work, and I plan to spend my day watching movies. I actually plan to spend my day watching Mexican wrestler movies, but because we were doing this, I spent my day watching Arrow movies. So.
Okay, well, I guess you're welcome. Is Mexican wrestler movies, are those good? I think you talked about those with me before, didn't you?
I don't know. Are they good? I mean, I like them. I think a lot of them are probably pretty bad, but they're fun.
I just know Nacho Libre, which is probably insulting to Mexicans and wrestling.
I love Nacho Libre. What
really?
Are you talking about?
Okay. All right. Well, there
oh,
you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's one for another episode. So, Tim, what are you up to?
It's hot here. It's very hot, so I'm staying indoors.
But, Tim, it's winter. What are you talking about? It's winter and it's Saturday.
It's summer and Sunday.
Okay, well,
I'm sure.
Yeah, I think you're on like the other side of the planet. You don't know what you're talking about. No, how hot is it out there? Just curious.
It's going to be, in your parlance, it's going to be 100 today.
Ah, that's nothing.
Yeah.
For us, it's actually 60 here. So anyway, people don't really care about our weather. Actually, they might care about your weather. That's pretty amazing in January, for us at least. So anyway, we're here to talk about Arrow, and so both of you are Arrow aficionados. I think more so than I am. Tim, are either of you guys Arrow complete or anywhere close?
I used to be, but they're a combination of the quantity that they started putting out a couple of years ago and a couple of titles, the Necromantic films and Blood Rage, made me less want to be a completist.
So you like good movies then? Even you like your bad movies to be good movies, is what you're
exactly.
saying.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so are you pretty close then?
No, not really, because their schedule has gotten a bit out of control.
Yeah.
But they're putting out, you know, a dozen titles some months. There's just no sensible way to keep up with that.
Yeah. And the release schedule is weird too. Sometimes they reissue, so we'll get into all that. I guess you're not going to buy a box set and then buy all the individuals. So I guess if you're completely going to be complete, that's what you'd have to do. So RJ, how's your Arrow library?
I'm not region free, partly by design to try and control what I need to do to be complete or that kind of thing. So I'm North American release complete. Not duplicating standalones and reissues, but I'm sort of title complete. And then as things get released that happen to be all region on the UK label, I may grab those as I see fit.
So, boy, I bet you're kicking yourself for not supporting the Indiegogo, or did you?
No, I didn't, no.
Because that gets expensive quick.
Yeah.
as you know. So I don't know how complete I am. I basically buy what I want to buy. I'm probably nowhere close because I don't buy a lot of films that overlap, but actually I didn't check. I probably have a couple hundred at least. I have a lot. Now, how many I've watched, that's the big question. So and I'm sure that'll come up. And actually, before we get into it too deep, I'm actually dealing with not a service issue, but I think I've had my first lost Aero disc. And what's a bummer is it's the carry limited edition. So I've been talking to their service department, and they say they send it, and it went out fine. And so, of course, it had to cross an ocean, and I don't know if they have any more of those. So I've yet to receive my my carry. So it did not make. We're going to do our best of 2017, and I think that would have been a contender if I'd had it. I know you guys, of course, are both separated by oceans, different oceans from the UK. Have you ever lost a shipment?
I've only ever properly lost one shipment, and that was from Zavi. Everything else shows up eventually.
Maybe I'll get mine. I think I should have got it. When did you guys get your carry? Was it last month?
Yeah, the first working day in January, I think. It was...
Okay, yeah. It's looking grim. So, yeah, all right. Well, one time, I I got an empty package that turned out to be... The Godard set from the UK, and it just completely fell out. So you never know what'll happen, but hopefully I'll get carry. But anyway, so on this show, we're going to talk about 2017. So of course, RJ will represent the US. I'm sorry, the US. I'm a boy. I just fulfilled that stereotype. he's going to represent North America. And I think Tim and I will represent the rest of the world, probably Tim a little more so than I. So we're going to we'll just get right into it. We're going to talk about our favorite releases of 2017. I guess just any opening statements before we go, and we'll go alphabetical. Just RJ, any thoughts about the year?
I thought it was by and large a good year. On the North American side, it was seemed to be more obscure things. It seemed a lot of the bigger titles were on the UK label. But there's a lot of discoveries for me, and there's a lot of sort of weird announcements. I don't think I'm really prone to gripe about things when there aren't enough horror titles. Although Fish Called Wanda sort of took me by surprise, I think, as a lot of people did.
Yeah, not doesn't scream Arrow, but, you know.
No. Well, I wasn't so sure about Ronin, but I warmed up to it.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, I enjoy Ronin quite a bit, but one thing to Tim's point about, well, not just, I guess this is not to Tim's point, but one thing is I own a lot of these, so I have another version of Ronin, and I think when you just buy a lot of editions, you know, the Arrows are great, but how many discs do you want to buy? So Tim, what do you think of the year?
Oh, it's been an excellent year. Apart from my top two, it was really difficult to narrow it down to just five. There's the box sets that they've been putting out under Arrow Academy are pretty essential, every one of them.
And they, we'll put a link in the notes, and they did their own best of 2017 and a little YouTube summary. I guess they had the customers vote. I think it was skewed horror, I'd say. But I liked the categories. You know, they had the best cover. Actually, the best cover was... The Duckling, How to Don't Torture a Duckling, and booklet, restoration, that sort of thing. So, but it also lists all the 2017 releases. So on the last show with Dave, we kind of observed that we had trouble finding them. Although we found out later, the Wikipedia is actually not that bad. And now the website's a little better. We'll get into that. But anyway, if you want to look at the list of 2017, it'll be on the links, in the show notes. What's deceptive about this is that a lot of these have already come out. Like I saw the Jacques Rivette collection, and that's the U.S. version. So, and in fact, I think that doesn't have out one, right? So you probably have that one, right, RJ?
Yeah, I haven't cracked it yet, but yeah, no out one.
Yeah, so that's another point is we have our five titles, and we own a lot, but how many have we watched? So there's a lot on this list, at least for me, that were unwatched. But anyway, I agree. It was a good year. Great Arrow Academy choices. And so what we're going to do, we're going to go in order. We just have top fives. And we also had did a poll in our Criterion Now forum. So I'll speak for those and also for myself, and we'll just start from five and go backwards. So, so RJ, what's your top number five of the year?
I got a couple that are probably not on anybody else's list, but I put for my number five Stormy Monday. For me, it was a film that wasn't on my radar at all. And when I think about Arrow and I put aside the horror aspect of it, I am keenly aware that it's a British label, and I'm very aware that it has a sizable quotient for sort of 80s nostalgia, but also neo-noir, and Stormy Monday sort of hits all of those notes and does it, I think, really well, from the neon and the cleavage and the shoulder pads and Sting and the sort of weird commodified US and personified in Tommy Lee Jones. It was a really good watch, I thought. It was an example of neo-noir that I think has done excellently, and it wasn't on my radar at all before it came out. I wouldn't have watched it but for an Arrow label being on it.
That happens a lot. There's a lot of movies I wouldn't have watched if it didn't have that A on it. It's off my radar. I have not bought that one, and I think I saw it and was intrigued, but yeah, not enough to pull the trigger. So the Community's number five was Phenomena, and that's the Argento with a young Jennifer Connelly. Have a feeling we'll probably get to that again, so I'm just going to move on. So Tim, what's your number five?
My number five is Phenomena.
Wow. What a phenomenon.
This is just what Arrow does so well. It's I'm talking the limited edition release. Three cuts of the same film, a CD soundtrack that's actually worth listening to, and I've listened to it a lot, and a pretty solid book. Phenomenon's probably one of my favourite Argento films. He steals from pretty much every horror subgenre and just throws it all at the wall. Most of it works. There's the occasional bit that doesn't. But you can just see bits of different types of monster movies. There's bits of imagery that you'd see in a vampire film. There's little steals from even Don't Look Now. It's just a fantastic box set. And you can watch something like Creepers, which is, well, pretty bad.
I was almost going to put that word in your mouth.
And it's the same film, and you can just sort of watch over it and see how badly it's been edited and seemingly redubbed in places. The dubbing seems particularly bad, but that may be just because of the way it's been edited. The only quibble I have with Phenomena is in the booklet. The first essay begins, "Even diehard Argento fans must agree Phenomena is not as minor Argento." So, no. Why put something like that in the booklet? Why open?
That's like saying, okay, so you might have thought this sucks, but a lot of people don't think it sucks. that Phenomena was... I alternated with my number five, and I almost put it there, but it was very close. One thing I do like the packaging for those limited editions, and I'm sure the bird with a crystal plumage will come up, even though it didn't make my list. But the apartment too, I think, is also has that same kind of packaging. I don't know what you actually call that kind of. It's not a slipcase. It's not a steelbook. It's just it's thick.
Almost a cardboard box.
Cardboard box. That's what we're going with. Okay. So my number five, I'm actually cheating here. I did watch a lot of films. In fact, I watched two this week that didn't make my list, although both were pretty close. But I'm putting one that I haven't seen. And the reason I haven't seen it is because I studied it in the past. I'm lying. I've seen it a lot of times, a couple times. But I did some academic work on the subject, so I didn't want to watch it again, right? You know, it's one I need to wait about 5 years to see. But I love this film. I, you know, quote love this film, and that is The Sorrow and the Pity. That's the documentary, 4-hour documentary about the, I guess, the French resistance, really, and the occupation in the 40s during the war. And I think it's just one of the best, probably like the definitive statement, maybe even visual or print, on the resistance and really just the what was going on at the time. So it's a long movie. I think it's about 4.5 hours, which probably that and also the subject is why I don't go race out to see it all the time. But I think it's a great addition. It's a beautiful cover. And this is the kind of film, you know, a 4-hour documentary. You know, Arrow is a popular label, and I think the Arrow Academy, they even put out a lot of films, like some that we'll talk about, that are popular with art house fans like us. This one's kind of a risk, and I'm glad they took a shot at it. So Sorrow and Pity is my number 5. All right, so back to RJ. What's your number 4?
My number 4 is the Arrow Academy release of Legend of the Holy Drinker. Another film that I'd never heard of, despite the fact that it won the top prize at Venice in its year. I really love Ermanno Olmi. I love Ife Denzati and Il Posto in the Criterion Collection. They're among my favorites. And but this was totally, again, off my radar. Probably wouldn't have watched it. But it's interesting seeing Rutger Hauer just be excellent in it, being sympathetic and compassionate and sort of lovable in his threadbare way. And this sort of strange, religious, almost dream quest at times that he's on. And Paris always looks great on film, and Paris looks great in Legend of the Holy Drinker. So it was another discovery that I really, really enjoyed.
Haven't seen it. I've wanted to. I love the title. It actually kind of sounds like a Jackie Chan movie, the title. he, of course, did Tree of Wooden Clogs, which also came out on both Criterion and Arrow this year, which I watched most of. I think I slept through part of it, but no, Omi is a great talent. So, all right, well, The Community had number 4 as the Eric Rohmer collection, and I think if we had a little more time with this and more people had time to buy it and digest it, it might have been a little higher. And anyway, I think that one will come up again. So Tim, what's your number 4?
My number 4 is The Four Marx Brothers at Paramount, 1929 to 1933, the Arrow Academy box set. I never ended up getting the US release when it came out 18 months ago due to a number of circumstances, which I'm now pretty grateful for. one of those being Barnes & Noble sale discount, which kept dropping off and coming back and dropping off, and I just gave up. So it's a really interesting box set to watch because you see the progression from the early sound through to Duck Soup, essentially. So the early film, particularly The Coconuts, where you've got the pointless musical numbers introduced into the narrative, well, not into the narrative, just into the film. You have all these disjointed things going on that are completely unnecessary and stretch out the running time, which I think is the intention, to Duck Soup. And you can kind of see through Animal Crackers, they drop some of those, I guess, training wheels, the things that they're learning to do along the way. And by the time they get to Horse Feathers, they've nearly perfected their shtick. And Duck Soup is just complete insanity. And it's just a wonderful set to just sit down and watch over the course of, I think I did in about 2 days. Just completely addictive.
Very watchable. Yeah, I was kicking myself because I bought the thing with the American edition, it just kept on going on sale. And so I probably got it for about half the price of what I got would have got the Arrow. And I think it has one more film, maybe two. It's not 4 films.
No.
Five
films.
Five films.
It's five films. They're both 5 films.
Oh, I'm sorry. The 4 Marx Brothers.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they're 4 brothers, 5 films. Okay, so the same thing. Anyway, so I bought it. But you know what? Sadly, because I've seen, I think, most of the films, I haven't watched the non-Arrow version, and I'm obviously not going to just buy it to own it again, to be a completionist. But But yeah, they were legends. So my number four is The Thing, which is, I have a feeling that you guys might have that on your list and might be a little higher. This is my third copy of The Thing, and actually this just
speaks
to... Yeah, actually, I gave one away as a prize on the show, so this is, I guess, my second now. I actually gave a Mondo Steelbook away. That's a pretty good addition, and I think that was actually to Robert Taylor, and he was very happy. But yeah, The Thing, what I love about Arrow is they really put their love and care into these films, and I think just the fact that this is four, and I love it so much, speaks to how good the year is. So. So yeah, it was full of features. Yeah, of course, I already owned it, so I can't remember how much better the transfer looked, you know, if at all. But it did. When I rewatched it, it did seem to shine. So maybe it was just me and liking new shiny new things and my own psychology. but yeah, I think it was one of the best releases, the fourth best release of the year, one of the best horrors. And the special features too. I was surprised by how, because I, you know, obviously lived through part of that. I was pretty young when it came out, but I thought it was better received. I kind of always remember living life with The Thing being just like thought of as a great film, but apparently it was not. So a really good documentary about it, and a couple other features. So anyway, well done, Arrow. That's one. I don't know if that came out again in America, but I think the Arrow is probably the definitive version, edition.
It came out on Scream Factory in the States about 18 months earlier than...
Is that a ghost?
There's lots of running going around in the background.
Tim's haunted, guys. Well, I'm glad I didn't buy the Scream Factory version. So thank you for ignorance. So RJ, we're at three now. What's your number three, sir?
My number three is the Taisho Trilogy by Seijin Suzuki. Suzuki's just such a fascinating filmmaker, and the first two films in this trilogy are his return from the wilderness back to filmmaking and releasing stuff. It's not a loaded set, but it has Tony Raines, who I really enjoy listening to, and he gives a lot of really good context for these films. They're strange films. They're dreamy, set in 1920s Japan. The best part to me is it's my favorite packaging of the year. I love the box and the individual films and the illustrations for those covers stand on their own. In a way, it's a shame they're in that box. It's a good thing that box mm-hmm. looks as good as it does, because it's all of that together makes that one of my favorite releases of the year.
And it's still in the shrink wrap for me. It is a great looking box, and I've stared at it a few times and thought, maybe it's time. But no, I think it's just the, you know, it's his later work, and it's just the time commitment. But yeah, have you seen the Taisho Trilogy, Tim?
I'm really looking forward to it. It's sitting on the shelf here as well. I'm guessing 13 Suzuki films to catch up on in the next 6 months. So
I think Suzuki's going to come back up. So, all right. Well, let's see the community. A lot of these are going to be the same. I think the top releases do stand out a little bit. Maybe not from yours, RJ, because you only had the Region A. Although, I should warn people, I don't remember which ones are Region A and Region B. So, buyer beware. But the third one in the community was Donnie Darko, and I'll just say again, that's going to come up again. So, Tim, what's your number three?
Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. This is one of my favorite films of all time, which probably doesn't say good things about me, but I do love this film. And it is one of those films that you feel like you need a good shower after you've watched it. It is,
yes.
It is a dirty, ugly, nasty film, but it is so good, so well made. It shows that Warren Oates should have been a leading man, as far as I'm concerned. He should have
Amen.
Starred in 20 films.
He was the best.
It has excellent supplements, including the bonus disc, which is on the limited edition, which you can still get, which has the director's cut of Sam Peckinpah, Man of Iron, which features 10 hours of basically people talking about Sam Peckinpah is comprehensive. It really is the mother load for a Peckinpah fan.
I think we're still haunted here, but...
it's a bit noisy out there.
It's okay. I have the Twilight time, and since I've seen it, haven't raced to watch it again, so yeah. But no, I agree with everything you said. Warren Oates, also the it's a dirty film, and you could say that Peckinpah was a kind of down and dirty director, and sometimes in a bad way, but I think just a very visceral, grimy director. You know, he was not afraid to show the underbelly of life. My number three is one that I talked about on the last the first Arrow Now episode, which is Kurosawa, Kiyoshi Kurosawa. I couldn't remember his first name. There's another Kurosawa out there that I was confused with. His Pulse, or Cairo, from 2001. And I was actually disappointed to see that in our Facebook poll, nobody else voted for this. So what's wrong with you people? So this is probably of everything, not including something in a box set. It's probably my favorite film of the group. Definitely my favorite horror film of the group. Although The Thing is pretty close, and Carrie would be close as well. I think it was my third time watching it, my first time in many, many years, and it just kind of speaks to modernity and technology, even though it, you know, was created around the time of the birth of social media. It actually predates social media and mobile technology, but it kind of speaks to those as well and is still all just as relevant as it was then, maybe even a little more so. So I think it's a great film, great tone, and as far as horror goes, even though I wouldn't say overall it's not like a giallo kind of gore fest horror, but some truly creepy scenes, and I think the transfer really brought those out. So buy Pulse if you guys don't have it yet. So RJ, what's yours? And if you voted for Pulse, I'm gonna give you a high five, I guess. I don't know.
No, in fact, I think Tim may do whatever the opposite of a high five is here, because my number two is Blood Rage. in a way to build on some of the things that we've talked about, Blood Rage to me sort of epitomizes a lot of the great things about Arrow. That to me, Blood Rage works as a holiday horror film. It works as a gore delivery service, and it works as sort of something that's funny, something you can laugh at for its cheesiness, ramatricious, and you can enjoy all of those things all at the same time watching it. And I think it epitomizes what Arrow's good at, which is some of the time it's finding rare indie horror films that don't have a profile unless you're a hardcore video cassette chaser. Mm-hmm. And then they treat it like it's Mr. Arcade, and they have this plethora of special features, and they give you three different editions of it. Yeah. And why Blood Rage would have an edition like that, who could say? It's great that it does.
I know, yeah. If I could think of a cranberry sauce joke, I would throw it in, but I can't. I think every cranberry sauce joke ever.
There's one in Blood Rage. So you don't have to worry about it.
There's about 20 in Blood Rage. That's one where I couldn't quite get around to the so bad it's good. But I do. I know it has its fans. Obviously, you're one of them. So good choice. Although that one came out, I think, in the UK like 2-3 years ago, right, Tim? So. That's where
it was a while ago. Yeah,
that's where it gets weird with the region A and region B. The community's number two was The Apartment. So, again, not surprised. That's a very popular film. Actually, that was a pretty big get, I think, for Arrow to release that in America. I'm sure Criterion, really any label, even the major labels. I'm surprised they weren't screaming. I have a feeling they paid for that one a little bit. Hopefully, they got a return on that. So, Tim, what is your number two?
My number two is the Eric Rohmer collection. sorry, I was actually planning to just watch these one a week and get through the box slowly. And once I started watching the comedies and Proverbs films, I basically had to watch them all in one go. It's a fantastic cumulative effect from watching those first six films. And you've got a lot of the same actors and actresses sort of in the films in different roles and minor parts, major parts, and very similar themes. So the films all sort of bleed into one another. And I noticed as I got further along the series, the films appeared to be getting better to me. I don't know whether the films actually got better, but whether it was because I'd watched one after another that I was just sort of immersing myself more in that world. Just for the six films alone, this is my number two. I've watched the two Modern Times films, the first of which was great, and the second of which is difficult in places. There's a lot of that's the mayor, the tree, and the media tech. Yeah. That's got a lot of people sitting in rooms talking about politics that doesn't quite work so well for me. But this is an excellent set, and I look forward to watching the adaptations, the last two films I have in there. Even if they're both terrible, this will still be one of the top releases of the year.
Spoiler alert, they're not terrible. I just finished the Media Tech, the tree, the mayor, and the Media Tech. And not to get into it too much, but I really enjoyed those static scenes with all the talking. I just love how he does dialogues.
And he
very, very smart fellow. We'll get into that in a second. So, RJ, what's your number one? We are to number one already. Okay. RJ, what's your number one?
My number one is The Thing. It's a UK release, but I love The Thing. It's a great sci-fi film. It's a great horror film. It's a great version. There's a ton of special features. The cover art's great. I'm North American bound, but I can tell that The Thing is the best release of the year in my mind, so there's no question to me.
So you're objectively projecting on a release. Are you going to buy it even though you can't play it?
It's out of the limited edition's out of print, right?
Oh, it is? Okay. Oh, well, you want to buy mine?
I was going to talk about that. The limited edition's out of print. The steelbook's out of print, but they've got a third edition out. But if anyone wants to go double check, the steelbook is available at Amazon.com at the moment, Amazon.co.uk at the moment via Amazon. So I don't know how many copies they've found in a warehouse, but they've got some for sale if anyone wants the steelbook.
If they do it by the time this episode comes out, people might have found them. Well, I'll just say that the community's number one was The Thing as well. Very popular release. And I'll kick it to you, Tim. What's your number one?
I was going to say that we didn't hear your number two, but we'll...
We didn't? Oh, wait, I skipped me.
But seeing as my number one's The Thing, I'll talk about that. And
good transition, yeah. Okay, I guess I'm going to talk about two films. I'm just trying to hog airtime here, guys. No, sorry about that.
So The Thing, once again, that's like all-time top 10 for me. It's a perfect movie, and the limited edition package is about a greater package as you'll ever see for that film. The 4K scan looks absolutely stunning on this film. And the practical effects that are in the film just stand up so perfectly, even under that clarity and scrutiny that you get from that. There's one scene where it kind of doesn't work. That's the matte painting around the UFO. That looks very artificial, but the rest of the film looks absolutely amazing on scan. And the Norris scene is, I think, about as great a scene as ever been put on film. It's a masterpiece.
One thing I'm surprised about is that Carrie's not on any of the lists here, but the thing is, I agree, it's a masterpiece. Well, my
number five was either Carrie or Phenomena. I went with Phenomena essentially for the soundtrack in the end.
Phenomena is a pretty strong release, so I'll find out if my shipper ever gets here who the Carrie is. But my number two is Donnie Darko, and I won't say. I think most people have seen it. It's probably one of the most popular films in Arrow, and actually it's a pretty big get, I think, as well. And I'm talking about the limited edition. I don't know if they've had another one. And again, it's just kind of the tender loving care. It has a lot of documentaries. I think it does have both cuts of the film, the director's cut and Yeah, it does. I prefer the shorter cut, although I don't dislike the longer cut. I think you get a little more context to, I think, some of the character relationships. It's been a while since I saw it, but I remember the father-son relationship was fleshed out a little more, and I thought added to it. But again, also, I don't mind a little bit of editing. But my number one is the Eric Rohmer collection. And Tim, I'm kind of stealing your thunder here. Well, okay, no, I'm not, because I did not binge watch these.
Did not steal yours?
Maybe you did. Yeah, maybe. So I had already seen about, I think, two or three. No, I'd seen three of these. The Marquis O, Green Ray, and Boyfriends and Girlfriends. Although in the set they call it, I think it's My Girlfriend's Boyfriend or something like that. So I'd seen those three, and those are all pretty great, except Marquis O is okay. And then I've watched three since then. I watched Percival, and then I watched Mirabelle, and was it Renee? And then the mayor. So this is an incomplete score, but I just know, and I think the best are yet to come. The comedies and proverbs, the majority of those are coming. I guess I watched it out of order, but I think Romero's style, his way of character dramas, the way he's a very intellectual type of director, but I wouldn't say in a pretentious way. I just think he's very smart, and he has characters that are also intelligent, and you don't often see that in film characters, but they exist, and they'll talk, like the mayor film talks about political philosophy and ecology, and it gets into pretty big depth, but also each version has flaws. So and then when, with his other films, the romantic comedies, you see kind of young people learning about the world and themselves, and also they're generally pretty smart and I guess curious. It's kind of like a mystery. They're exploring their world. So anyway, I think he's one of the definitive voices of the generation. I think besides this and the Six Moral Tales and the Seasons, I think this is pretty much. I mean, I know he's done like 50 something films, but I think it's cream of the crop, basically. So yeah, good job, Rohmer. And that's it. It's top five. It came out in December, so I think not a lot of other people have had it, but on their list. So, all right, well, you guys want to talk about the recent announcements? We just had them this week, and I think they were, well, I'll just say that they teased earlier in the week that they said that this announcement was not going to be great, not going to be a very big announcement, so they teased some films coming out. So let's talk about those first.
Just before that, they've changed the way they do their announcements, which probably plays into that. So we now get an announcement a week, pretty much, which I like. The first Friday of the month, they talk about what they're reissuing. The second is Arrow Academy. The third is any vinyl or books. And the fourth is the actual Arrow video releases. Nice. So it's not that much of a surprise that you can end up with a week with not much announced.
I did not know that. I basically just, when they show up on social, you're talking about how they have 12 releases. I think it seems like there's always a release. So that explains it. I did not know that. So thank you.
And this is the first month they've done that. And I think it's because a lot of people complained when, they announced the four House films individually and the three American Horror Project films as part of their December releases.
Also when they're doing it on different pages where you have an Acaro Academy page on Facebook versus video, you start to be shuffling between platforms.
And I think, and I might be wrong, but I think they actually used to do one, like the Arrow releases on Friday and then the Academy on Monday. So you basically have to have a week of suspense. And I don't know. I think maybe the three of us kind of gravitate more to the art house side. So I think the Academy is generally more exciting for us than the others. But anyway.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
I look forward to all of them.
Maybe a good balance then. And I gravitate more to the art house. It's pretty clear, but I do enjoy all of them. So they teased 12 Monkeys and Elvira are just coming out this year. I wonder if they're stealing a page from Criterion with, the newsletter clues. And sometimes they've hinted at upcoming releases, but not really like this. I think they showed a drawing for 12 Monkeys. Actually, I think they showed images for both. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. They had an image that was from the 12 Monkeys poster and one that was really obviously Elvira.
So
that was from the poster, too.
Was it? Okay. Yeah. And, you know, I have not seen an Elvira movie. I don't think I realized there was one just because I grew up with her as a cultural thing. So is that worth being excited about?
Which one?
The Elvira movie.
I haven't seen it. She never really made much of an impact in Australia. I think she was a bit of a cable thing in the States, my guess.
She was, yeah.
I'm super excited about it. I think maybe 2 years ago, I imagined what an Arrow video would look like for Elvira on my blog. So I'm interested to see how they compare.
Okay. She was basically, she had like a huge wig, and we'll just say for the 80s, she had a huge couple other things. So she had an audience. I just Googled it. She had a movie called Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. But you're right. She was a host of a cable, like a late night cable show. And boy, I'm terrible. I forget what the show was. But I think it actually, she hosted, was it Night Flight or something like that? No. Anyway, she hosted like B movies, so probably a lot of releases that have showed up on Arrow, Elvira probably maybe not curated but introduced for TV back in the day, and then 12 Monkeys, of course, is the remake of La Jetée. It's Terry Gilliam, so that's also a pretty popular movie. I'm actually kind of surprised that it hasn't received major boutique label treatment. So that I am excited for that one, although I prefer La Jetée. So you guys.
Oh, 12 Monkeys is a fantastic film. I'm really looking forward to having a nice deluxe package. And I was looking at my shelf the other week and saw 12 Monkeys there and was wondering why it hadn't had a more substantial release.
And
I don't think it has a good high-definition release. I think the one that exists doesn't have a lot of the special features that existed on the DVD. And it'd be nice if something definitive got released through Arrow.
Yeah, and I kind of wonder if who knows if it's going to be A, B, or what. But I know Criterion has a relationship with Gilliam, so I kind of wonder if maybe I don't know about the studios and all that. If that might be a UK only release, and maybe Criterion will eventually get 12 Monkeys. I think that would be a good fit. But either way, both I guess I'll wait to buy 12 Monkeys just in case whenever they announce it. I'm probably going to pass on Elvira. Sorry, RJ. I've seen enough. So, okay, well, then this last week's announcements were Seijun Suzuki, speaking of which, the Early Years Volume 2, and I've yet to get Volume 1. There's just a lot of Seijun Suzuki, so that I think that'll be something to get later on a sale or something. And then Blade of the Immortal by Takashi Miike, which is Region B only. Sorry, RJ. And then
I've seen it. I'm good.
Is it good?
It's slashy fun.
Okay. And then congrats, RJ. Deep Red is coming out on Region A. So I have that Region B, the limited edition from, what was that, a year or two ago? And that's a terrific release. Whatever year, I don't remember when it came out, it would be near the top of that year. So that's great news, and that's a great get for Region A. So I'll go in alphabetical order. Aside from Immortal, RJ, any thoughts on the two?
I love Japanese cinema. It's one of my favorite things about Arrow is that they release a fair amount of it. So I'll take whatever I can get. And I like genre cinema in particular. So the two together is great. I'm really excited about Deep Red. I don't think I've seen it. So I think I might have seen a few clips, but I don't think I've ever actually watched it. So I'm very excited about that one. And I saw Blade of Immortal at a film festival in the fall. And I don't think it's, for Miike samurai films, it's not really, to me, up there with 13 Assassins or Harakiri. It's a comic book adaptation, so it's much more comic booky. It's slashy fun, and if you want a body count, it's great. I don't think it quite has the gravity of his other ones, but it's still an enjoyable watch.
Actually, I think it's kind of unique for them to get a new film. They generally don't get, well, they have a couple. Well, I know, I'm sorry, I'm thinking of, that was Masters of Cinema. I was thinking about the Kiyoshi Kurosawa's. They had a couple of his recent releases. I think they've had others. Well, they had Amour Fou, they had Lost in Paris just recently. So, I guess.
Counts of Love's just come out as well.
That's right. I think Amour Fou was a couple
Zoology.
Years
ago. Zoology.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. What do I know? yeah, Suzuki seems like a perfect fit for their label just because he's a great mix of art house and schlock. And of course, he had a lot of output in a lot of different eras. So, Tim, do you have any thoughts on the trio?
The Suzuki Early Years Volume 1's been put back about 4 months. I think it's due out in 2 weeks now.
Okay. No wonder I don't know.
And Volume 2 looks fantastic. It looks like a great collection of films. It is limited to 1,500 copies, so you may not want to wait too long for a sale.
I might not wait then. What about the first, the one that's coming out in a couple weeks? Is that one also limited?
I would assume so. It's not available on Amazon UK anymore, but there's still some on the website.
Well, I might be spending some points here in a second, because I do want to see those films. I believe those do not overlap with any Criterion. I could see maybe like an Eclipse someday, but yeah, that's probably the only way to get them. I'm sure you love Deep Red.
Oh, absolutely! That box is superb. That is my favorite Argento film, and the two cuts on that release, they both work in different ways for me.
I agree.
And that also came with the soundtrack, which looks like it's not on the Region A version. Sorry.
The Goblin soundtrack?
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad. Okay. Yeah, that's great. I would still say Suspiria is my favorite, which that was actually a big loss that, because Cult Films is getting that. And I actually subscribed to that, I went through there. I can't remember if it's Kickstarter or Indiegogo. So that'll arrive soon. That was Synapse in the United States. But yeah, Deep Red, I think it has some of that surreal imagery and the colors, but not quite as intense. It's kind of a little bit halfway between like his, I'd say almost like the procedurals, like Crystal Plumage and the True Giallos, but leans more towards the art giallo, I guess, that he did. So yeah, that's a great release. And, hopefully it'll be a good box. Well, I guess we can talk about some of the recent releases. There are a ton of them. I put together just a big list, and I'm not going to read them all because I just don't think that's a good podcast. It's just reading a list of films. So I'll just go in order and just ask if there are any highlights here for you guys. And these are all recent releases or upcoming. So RJ, any thoughts? And by the way, I didn't filter these by Region A, so if you want to, I just took whatever was on the website.
I don't have the list in front of me. I don't remember what was on there. I think, to be honest, the Suzuki films were the biggest thing for me. And I'm just looking at the website. It looks like the Volume 1, the youth movies, is still available. It looks like it's not sold out. So if anybody's interested in that, that looks like that's still up for grabs. But that's... So that to me, I think, is maybe the thing I'm most looking forward to at the moment for what I buy.
Sorry, if I'm quiet, it's because I'm on their website buying it right now. Maybe I should have shared the list with you guys. But as far as Region A, I think Killer Clowns from Outer Space, is that Region A? I don't know.
It is.
That's one thing, being Region B enabled, you don't have to worry about that. Tim, do you want to throw out any thoughts on any of the bunch, and I'll maybe read some highlights?
Well, they've got a non-limited carry release, and I didn't talk about carry earlier, but the commentary by Lee Gambin and Alexandra Helen Nicholas, two Victorians, so people that live in my state here, is superb. I really loved watching the film with their commentary. And great to hear some Australian accents. Carrie is a film that really benefited for me for watching it with the commentary, because I could concentrate on the visuals and even though I've watched Carrie, I don't know how many times now, I was really struck by De Palma's camera, which I usually am, but for some reason in Carrie it had never struck with me so much. I think it's because the performances are so good in that film. Of the other upcoming releases, Sacha Guitry for Films, which has been obviously endlessly delayed. I cannot wait for that. And Images, the Robert Altman film, is something I've been waiting to see for close to 20 years. I've never been able to find a copy of it, so I'm really looking forward to seeing that. And the Godard Goren set is another one that I've obviously bought a long time ago and I'm waiting for. But since seeing the Goren Eclipse set, I've really wanted to see more films from him. And I think it'll be a really fascinating set. So
yeah, I'm on the fence on that one. Good. Sorry, go ahead. Well, yeah, you're right. Sacha Guitry has been... He has been kicked down. I'm distracted because I'm ordering as we're speaking. I actually ordered the Sacha Guitry set with Carrie, so that's maybe why it was lost. But they say it shipped out separately, so that one, of course, has been delayed. So that's coming out. By the way, one release that came out this year that we didn't mention was Four Film Noir Classics, which is one I haven't bought yet. Which I actually might be too late. That's one thing.
It's out of print.
Yeah. If you miss out on Arrows, I think it's usually reasonable, like Carrie and like The Thing and Deep Red. There will be other non-limited edition versions that'll come. Hellraiser, House, all that. But yeah, if you miss out on the good one, you miss out. There's also... go ahead.
That's an excellent set, by the way. The four film lines. Yeah. Particularly the last two films in the set. They were brilliant. Force of Evil and Big Combo.
And then we also have, La Chinoise, which is the, or is it Chinois? I never know. That's another Godard. Early Godard. We have Shock Treatment, which is, if I remember right, I think that's the sequel to Rocky Horror, isn't it?
Yeah, they released a limited edition, well, two limited editions of Shock Treatment with the soundtrack. Right. Soundtrack's the best thing about that film.
And then Raising Cain is coming. I already have one version, so that's, again, where it's tough to... So I'm not sure if that's a non-limited version or if it's a Region A.
That's a non-limited version. Screen Factory put out the Region A. It will have the non... It will only have the theatrical version, I think. It won't have the fan edit director's cut.
Oh, that's too bad, because actually I watched the original version back in the day and didn't like it, and I was really looking forward to watching the fan edit and reevaluating it. But that might be a big loss. And yeah, so a lot of great releases recently, a lot of releases, period. So they are nothing if not prolific. Flowers in the Attic, so I wasn't really longing for that, but maybe. There's a Pistol for Ringo and the Return of Ringo. That's not Ringo Starr. That's just so there's Vanilla, The Crazies, a whole bunch of stuff. And yeah, I think Killer Clowns is a pretty big one. So and then, of course, they have a new website, which I'm actually trying to manipulate as I'm hosting this podcast, which is quite interesting. But so that's one thing we were somewhat critical of the website last time, and I think it's definitely improved. So I'll go back and order. RJ, what do you think about their new website?
I don't mind it. I don't deal with it a lot because I'm buying North American.
Right.
It redirects you to buy from Diabolik. So I tend to buy – I buy through them for my Arrow stuff because if you're not buying Region B or Region B – labeled discs, then you buy it through Diabolik, and so that works okay for me. The new one I find a little bit hard to navigate in terms of I'd like to just find pages of upcoming and new, and it's sort of in these scrolling bars that I find a little bit challenging, but I'm not ordering things, so I can't speak to that part of it.
I will say that for this website, that was helpful, but I think I think you're right. It would be nice if they kind of had borrowed Criterion's and just had like a big list you could sort. So what do you think, Tim?
It's better, but it's still not fantastic. It is hard to find things. At least you can see, although that's probably not great for some people, but you can see the out-of-print stuff now. Before it just disappeared off the website.
Oh, really? Okay.
It is not easy to navigate. And when there's a sale on, it just takes you to their complete list of releases. So you've got 800 things to work through. And so
you can change the number per page, but you're still going to be scrolling through a lot of stuff. Yeah, I agree.
Function's a bit iffy. So if you're using your phone and you do autocomplete, it doesn't put the autocomplete in there, and you know, minor things like that. But it's a little bit annoying.
Yeah, it definitely is an improvement. And I know they're a smaller company, even though they have a large distribution and large audience all across the world, as we're evidence of. I think they have to gradually grow. They can't just you know, put up an amazing website overnight. I think they have to build it on the current infrastructure, which is probably my guess is that's the problem. I'd say it's better. One thing to point out is they've definitely changed their point structure. So I think I can't remember what we said in the last episode, but we had recommended people not buy them in sales. I think the opposite's true now. I think you want to use them in sales because and to be honest with you, I'm not positive. I just used a bunch when I just placed my Volume 1 and Volume 2 Suzuki orders, so thanks for that, RJ and Tim. But I did use points for that. But what they used to do is they would do double points during sale, and I think what they're doing now is half points during sale rewarding. So it's better to just pay to buy them during the sale and pay full price. I don't know. We'll figure it out. So, yeah. But it is at least it is easier to find the more recent stuff rather than searching or going to Wikipedia or whatever. So, all right. Well, what do you guys think of just Aero in general? I mean, as a company, as a boutique label, do you think are they moving in the right direction? Are they one of the top players, or they still have some work to do? I don't know. What do you think, RJ?
I think they're one of the top players. To me, the impression I get from Aero is just they're sort of spreading in all directions. They're a cult label, and they've got their art house label, and they're, you know, they're doing some of the other things with sort of the Nordic noir. They're moving into records and to books and whatnot. And so there's a sort of spreading in all directions, but not doing it too quickly. By and large, I like the variety. I mean, I don't really think of it as a horror label. I think of it as a cult label and an art house label. So absolutely, I like the directions it kind of moves into different areas. I don't really get offended by certain releases. So I like it. And we haven't really mentioned it also, but they have a podcast that I quite enjoy. They've got a bi-weekly podcast that's a lot of fun and isn't limited to Aero. They'll talk about other things and they'll act as proponents for other things. And I think that's a lot of fun as well. So I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, we talked about the podcast last time. Yeah, it is good. So, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was about to mention the podcast of Sam Ashurst and Dan Martin. They've got a really good rapport. Obviously, they used to be housemates. And even though it's an Arrow-sponsored podcast, they really don't care what they say about the films.
Not a company-endorsed podcast, right?
No, it is.
Oh, yes.
Okay. It's 100% endorsed by Arrow. They'll be on the payroll. But, they just do a great job, and they got a great chemistry. The last episode was on Blood Rage, and it did turn me around a little bit on it. They had the producer of the release on there explaining why he loved the film so much and why he wanted to release it, and it was it was a really good conversation. I really liked that episode.
And I have a feeling it's kind of like Criterion in that that you need somebody in the building to champion a film, and they probably have. Actually, I know of a couple of the personalities have a wide range in tastes. I could definitely see. I would love to hear the podcast. I'll listen this week to hear what went into the selection process into that. So Tim, what do you? I know you're like complete everything. So you collect a lot of discs. In fact, people can't see it, but you're surrounded by discs right now. So what do you think Aero stands? What's your impression of them in the market?
They're top two, probably after Criterion. They're the quantity and quality of what they release is extraordinary, and they do take the care with the supplements, and possibly more so than Criterion have been of late.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly when it comes to books and packaging, and you look at something like the Romare collection, it's just beautiful, beautiful artwork. And I think Phenomena is probably my favorite packaging of the year, is the artwork, and that is stunning.
They do love their stuff, yeah.
But I also like, that they do the limited edition releases, but now they've taken to, you're more than aware the majority of time that you'll be able to pick up these things later at a cheaper price as they split out boxes. So it's not quite as desperate as it once was.
Yeah, they kind of they cater to both the collector and the film watchers. So if you're if you don't, I think people like us that are I guess home media nerds, I think that's fair to say we all three qualify. But we like the shiny stuff on the shelf. But if you just want to get a good high definition copy of the film and you want to wait, like the Hellraiser stuff, that was a pretty penny. But you can get them cheaper later. So. I agree. They're up there, and I think they're growing, actually. I think that some of the titles they've gotten, I think actually 12 Monkeys is just further proof that they're getting good acquisitions. They're, The Apartment, again, that's huge. And Romare. Carrie. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And actually the Romare collection on the art house side, I'm sure there's a lot of interest in that because those films haven't really come out on Criterion or any other Masters of Cinema or anything else. So, I wonder what'll happen with the other two collections. So, all right, well, of course, this is the second episode of Aero Now, but we're kind of stealing the Criterion Now format. So we have this thing called Short Takes, where we talk about, usually a Criterion movie, but I think we're going to stretch it a little bit. So this is going to be an Aero piece of content, I guess, because they're in a lot of different directions. So RJ, what's your short take?
My short take was Aero Books, so I'm the one sort of pushing us into weird directions. So Aero, if people don't know, Aero has it's new. They've got two books out, three more announced. And they're these small little monograph-style books. I'm a real sucker for the monographs, whether it's the BFI or Cultographies or 33 and a Third or whatever it is. These seem to sort of emulate the BFI Classics series. They're roughly the same size and length. The two they have out, one is by Tom Mess, Unchained Melody, The Films of Mike Okaji. It's not a particularly technical or theoretical book. It's not deep in reception or things like that. It's just a really solid primer on Mike Okaji with an emphasis on those films that Westerners would be familiar with, Lady Snowblood and The Female Prisoner Scorpion. But it also spends a chapter on her TV work. It spends a chapter on her career as a recording artist. And so that's really good. The Ghost in the Shell book is by Andrew Osmond, who did the BFI book on Spirited Away, which is one of my favorite of the BFI books. And that's a little bit more of a deep dig. That's enjoyable, although not as lengthy as the Tom Mess Mike Okaji book. They've got a book on the Blair Witch Project, a book on Sergio Martino coming out, and The Hitcher, which apparently is by Tim's country mate, Alexandra Heller-Nicholas. So he can read that and imagine his own accent, I suppose. But I really look forward to The Hitcher. It'll be a good book, too.
It's actually a documentary. That's the way Australia really is, so I hear. Is that right, Tim? Did you buy their – I know they had like a big cult book. I think it was last year, and it was a little – people hated on it a little bit, and people hate on Aero way too much. Sometimes I think the backlash is a little strong, but do you have that? Either of you
I
guys?
Don't have that.
Okay.
I have it. Yeah, I've got all the books as well. The problem with the cult films book is it looks beautiful. A lot of the content is from booklets. So that's if you've got the movies, then you basically already have all the words.
Well, I guess you don't have to open the DVDs or the box sets at one convenient place, but I think that's actually why it got some hate, because I think people thought it would be some sort of new, kind of like a Danny Perry cult film compendium, but it was really just a repackaging and reprinting of everything they put out. So, Tim, what's your short take?
Well, I'll just say I've read the Miko Kaji book as well, which I've no doubt just butchered the pronunciation of. It was a really enjoyable read, and yeah, it wasn't a deep dive into her career, but it was interesting to me, the background of the Japanese film industry at the time, talking about the studios like basically moving to porn. And so the actresses, like major studios, shifting away to television and shifting to other studios so that they could actually act. It was a really interesting like overview of the cinema at the time. But my short take is Forbidden Zone. The very odd movie that came out of Oingo Boingo. I've been recommending this film for years. I took it as a blind buy a long, long time ago. It was like the early days of me buying Blu-rays. And it just completely blew me away. And I realized that I've been recommending it for all this time, and I haven't probably watched it in about 5 or 6 years. So I thought I'd better watch it again before I recommended it to anyone else. And yeah, it's certainly not for everyone, is my take out from the recent viewing. It looks like a Fleischer cartoon. It's meant to be seen in black and white, and it's completely bonkers. There is a color version of it, which is disturbing to look at on the disc. And it's kind of like if you've watched the Rocky Horror Picture Show and thought, well, that film is way too conservative for me, way too coherent. This is probably a film that was made, well, for you and not anyone else. The only flaw it really has is it's kind of racist in a lot of places, which I've never really picked up on before, but it's a bit, parts of it are a bit difficult to watch. But seeing Danny Elfman as Satan is, well, it's worthwhile.
yeah, you know, that one's probably been of all of the, I guess, the cult film Arrow releases, the kind of the so bad it's good releases, that's probably the one that's been recommended to me enough. And actually, after the first Arrow episode, I'd kind of earmarked that to be my short take for the second one. So, but I didn't do that one. I did another one. So I still haven't seen it. Would you liken it to like House and Katakuri's? Is it kind of that kind of bonkers or a different kind of bonkers?
I think we might have lost Tim.
Yeah, we did lose Tim. Well, do you have an opinion, RG? Maybe Tim will rejoin soon.
Yeah, I really like Forbidden Zone. It's one of my favorites. One of the things I was going to add is that there's a very good North American Blu-ray of it, but the Arrow
Blu-ray. Dropped out then for a while.
It's okay. We're still rolling, Tim. Go ahead.
Cool.
Go ahead, RJ.
Oh, I was just saying that there's a very good North American Blu-ray of Forbidden Zone, and so I'd encourage anybody to look at that. But as well, the Arrow Blu-ray of Forbidden Zone, I believe it says it's Region B on its website, but I have it, and it's all region. It's ABC.
You know,
and I think if you go online, you look at the packaging, it actually shows it as being ABC on the packaging. So I don't know if they've changed that, and if that's an old version of it or whatever. But if people are interested in the Arrow version, and that's, I think, the superior edition of it, they should take a look at it, because if you're North American bound, you may still be able to enjoy the Arrow Video edition.
I guess maybe a risk in case it does not work. But yeah, I've noticed that. And by the way, anybody that buys a region A or region B, if you buy it from the UK version, it'll play on A pretty much always. Because I think there was one release recently that that wasn't shipping out or for some reason, so people had to buy the – or I think they were canceling orders. I forget which one it was. So, Tim, are you back with us?
Yeah. No, I'm back. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened.
That's okay. Well, I think I don't know if you missed it, but I asked if it's kind of bonkers like House and Happiness of the Katakuris, or is it a different kind of bonkers?
It's bonkers like House. I can see that. But it's its own. It's like a 20s cartoon. It is. Yeah.
Okay. Like Benuel. Like
No, like Fleischer. Like the sort of those.
It's zany.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It is very zany. But that's lots.
Good adjective. All right. Well, mine is a new release, and actually, this one I enjoyed. And again, speaking of how they love their films, and they take bad films and criterionize them. And I think I can use that term. So, Brain Damage. And boy, I didn't look bring the director Hertoven or something was like he also.
And Lada.
Thank you. He's done a couple other major releases.
Basket Case.
Yeah, Basket Case. And I think Basket Case 2, and then he did another one too. But anyway, this was a interesting film. One of the funniest monster introductions, I think, in film. And in fact, I saw it, and I'm not going to repeat it, but it's almost like the schlock Harry Lime. So I showed it to my wife. Just the way it introduces itself is it was quite funny. Very phallic. It's basically a creature that I guess takes possession of somebody in a way, in the same manner that a drug would, and actually kind of gives them a high, but it needs something in return. And we'll just say that it has a particular taste in food that you have to deliver to it. So, not the deepest film. Like, I don't think you could watch this 10 times and find a whole lot of motifs. I think pretty much everything is there on the screen. But, and actually technically, I think as far as the creature effects, probably for the budget, were exceptional. A lot of fun and very funny and very, you know, in the Arrow style of funny. Like, I know that you like, Blood Rage, RJ, but I think this works where that one fails. I think a lot of the jokes land, And I think it actually makes fun of 80s, like especially like the metal culture, you know. And I don't want to get into the specific scenes, but there's one that might be going into groupie culture a little bit, and groupie metal culture. So yeah, fun film. Did you guys watch it?
I haven't seen it. I've seen a couple of other Hamlotter films, but not that one.
I recommend it. Go ahead, Roger.
Yeah, I've seen it. I totally agree. It's lots of fun. And, you know, to tie it back to Elvira, the weird phallic tumor thing that it is voiced by another horror host, Zachary, and his voiceover right. For that creature is hilarious. It's great.
Yeah, he kind of, it's almost like a, I was going to say a Max Headroom kind of voice, but no, it's more like a, I don't know, Herman's Head kind of voice, maybe.
I don't know. It always strikes me. It's Max Headroom's interesting. It's sort of like Max Headroom and I don't know. Sort of Dr. Frankenstein together. Yeah.
It's like an everyman
to
kind
create
of.
A voice.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, Frankenhooker is the other one he did. I think that's on. And he did a documentary about Herschel Gordon Lewis, and you definitely can see the influence there. So yeah, I think that was a great choice. I'll also say that I watched How to Torture a Duckling this week, and that's another great early, I guess, kind of a transitional giallo. So it's still more procedural mystery and a little bit of the schlock horror, but yet, of course, a very important Fulci film. So that's our show. I think we got through it pretty quick. So you guys have a piece of flair, and for Arrow fans that don't know Criterion now, this is just anything that's usually non-Criterion related, but this time we're going to make it non-Arrow related. So, RJ, do you have a piece of flair?
Yeah, I'm going to play the role of Homer here, and my piece of flair is Guy Madden's new movie, The Green Fog.
Way to go.
So people don't know The Green Fog was commissioned for the San Francisco International Film Festival. Madden has loosely, apparently very loosely, I haven't seen it yet, remade Vertigo using found footage from film and television of all kinds of different eras. It started in sort of booked engagements at the beginning of January. It's getting really good reviews. I'm very excited, but I know it will eventually play here, and I'm waiting for it. I know Madden in the last few years has sort of discovered Bill Morrison. I know he's a fan of Matthias Mueller and Christoph Girardet, who work in found footage. So it's really interesting to me that he's launched into found footage. He's collaborating with Evan and Galen Johnson, who worked with him on his last movie, which is The Forbidden Room. They've helped him with a lot of visual effects to convert video to look like not just like film, but like deteriorating, bubbling, buckling film. So there's going to be some manipulation of this content as well. There is a trailer up. I think if you don't know what it is, I'm not sure the trailer tells you a lot, but if you do, it's kind of interesting. So it's being well received. It's just starting to circulate in theaters outside of the festival. And so I'm interested in it. I'm curious about it. So I'd encourage anybody else to try and find it too.
Can't wait. Guy Madden is a very unique voice, although the Morrison connection, that's interesting how that'll turn out. So yeah, that sounds like right up my alley. Tim, do you have a piece of flair?
I'm going over to another UK label, Indicator. Their 28 release schedule so far has been pretty phenomenal. They put out 48 films last year, which is no mean feat, really, for a label that's only been around for about 13 months now. Their 2018 release schedule has been, like, they've been going through my wish list of things that I want to see on Blu-ray. So they've just released Blue Collar and Charlie Barrack. Antonioni's The Passenger is coming out in March, and a film that I've always wanted to see, particularly since the Magic Lantern episode on it, has been hinted very unsubtly as a clue for April, which is the Elliot Gould film Little Murders. I'm just really blown away by this label and what they're doing. Their supplements are always great. Their transfers are always fantastic. And they're a label that I'm really keeping a close eye on.
Yeah, me too. When they first came out, it basically seemed like they were just redoing a lot of the Twilight Time titles. And I think they still do get some of those, but they definitely found their own niche beyond the kind of Twilight Time American. Antonioni, I guess that's technically American, but he's Italian. Blue Collar is terrific. They also had the Harryhausen sets, which I think I only have one of them because I had the Arrow titles for the others, but Twilight Time. But yeah, they're really doing well, and that's bold for all these boutique labels to come out and just kind of knock it out of the park like that. So I've bought maybe a handful. Definitely not a completionist, but I'm really really into what they're doing. Mine is this little thing called February. So this is actually Matt Gasteyer's brainchild, and I kind of co-opted it for the Criterion Now show for Blue Christmas and Blue Year's Day, or what, I can't remember what I called it. But what the idea is that you just watch unwatched discs for the whole month of February. So he put together a letterbox list of the ones he wants to watch, just the titles laying around that he just for some reason has not gotten to. So I did the same, and I ended up with about 50 titles. A lot of them were Arrow, some Criterion, a lot of them were Olympics because we're going to do an episode on the Olympics box set. Yeah, so that's my thing. Of course, I'm not going to completely go without digital or theaters because a lot of the award season films are coming out on streaming, Blu-ray, and of course in theaters. But I think for the most part, I'm going to do my best to watch as many of these 51 films as I've put on my list. But I'm going to fail. There's no way I'm going to get to it all. So still novel idea, Matt. And I think if you go to Criterion Considered, there might be some activity about that. I'm not positive. So anyway, February, good idea. So you can find us, of course, this is an occasional show I think we'll keep on doing, Arrow Now, and probably do another one in a few months. But you can find us at Criterion Now or on the Criterion Cast Master Feed. You just subscribe and get all the other episodes, including Criterion Reflections. And we have another project that's about to launch. Where can people find you, RJ?
People can find me at my blog, Make Mine Criterion, which is makemincriterion.wordpress.com. They can find me on Letterboxd at RJ Tugas and probably lurking around the Criterion Now Facebook page.
Maybe a little more than lurking, but yeah. What about you? And I should have mentioned Make Mine Criterion at the beginning. Sorry. So that's basically a blog where you kind of take a title you want to see and you fictionally make up what the extras would be. Has anything come remotely true or close to true yet, RJ?
I've had a few that I've done. I did the Burbs and Matinee slightly before Arrow did theirs and before Shout Select did theirs. I did Safe, which really wasn't that much of a reach before. The most interesting thing I discovered is I found an academic book on Argentinian cinema that seems to quote my website to suggest that there's a Criterion edition of Invasion, not understanding the premise of
that's great.
Of what my blog is. So there's a textbook out there that cites me, but it's not.
great job, academia. So, all right, Tim, where can people find you on the interweb? Oh, I'm sorry. Did you give everything, RJ? You did, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Tim, where can people find you on the interwebs?
I'm probably most active on Twitter at LegoT or Marvel Presents Salo, or on Letterboxd as at LegoT, LegoeT. I write something for every film I watch. Yeah. Half the time it's a flippant comment, but I like to keep track of what I've been watching.
You have a great Letterboxd. I love Letterboxd. It's just a great service. I'm AWES505 on Twitter and most other places, but my letterbox is DSNT, and I do not write a little thing for every film I watch, but maybe I should. I've been writing snippets for the Olympic films, but not too in-depth. Thank you guys for joining me. This is the second Arrow Now, so it's historic.